is an excerpt from Welcome to the Machine. It starts on page 72. What must be grasped about all of this, if we are to have any significant chance of altering the course, or rather helping the natural world to alter the course, of our deathly culture, is that Belonkin's vision has already come to pass. And Belonkin's vision is a transhumanist vision, a vision of humans melding with machines and getting rid of our, as he calls it, biological substrate. It's a terribly anti-nature worldview. And it's, of course, this worldview permeates this culture. And it's the basic biblical version of, heaven. The mind is what is important, and the body is a veil of tears. It's all that nature hatred, patriarchal nature hatred, sort of the essence of it. Anyway, so with that knowledge, I'll start over. What must be grasped about all of this, any significant chance of altering the course, or rather helping the natural world alter the course, of our deathly culture, is that Belonkin's vision has already come to pass. We're already living in the midst of it. Just as it would be a mistake to consider the Panopticon to be only a building of stone and glass and light and dark, it's a mistake to consider machines to be only artifacts made of iron and steel, and computers to be only metal boxes housing silicon chips. They're all much more. The Panopticon is a social arrangement, a way of life, a way of being in the world and relating to the world and to each other. The machine, too, is a social arrangement, a way of life, a way of being in the world and relating to the world and to each other. And the computer also is a social arrangement, a way of life, a way of being in the world and relating to the world and to each other. We're inside of the Panopticon. We're inside of the machine, and we're inside of the computer. What does science do? It calls for everything to be measured. It calls for everything that cannot be measured to be ignored or destroyed, and everything that can be measured to be analyzed according to the rules of science. It calls for calculations to be made as to how everything that can be measured and analyzed can best be used. It calls for those doing the measurements, calculations, and analyses, and most especially their masters, to rule over everything that can be measured. We are describing the methods and effects of science, not the conscious motivations of every scientist. What is science for? To analyze. Why? To predict. Why? To reduce risk for those doing the calculations and their masters, and to control those about whom, or to use their lingo which, these predictions are made. Why do they do this? So those performing these analyses and predictions can rule over everything they can analyze and destroy everything they cannot. Under this rubric, what is power? It's the ability to control outcomes. What, then, is a bureaucracy? It is administration by rules, efficiency, and quantification. It is the administration of control. What, then, is a culture administered by a bureaucracy? It is a machine. What are the necessary preconditions for the conversion of a living human community into a machine? Members of this community must begin to perceive themselves not as fluid threads in a complex and ever-changing web of relationships, where they may play this or that role as appropriate, necessary, and desired by them and others, but as gears within cogs within gears in what they now perceive as a giant machine over which they have no fundamental agency, no loving stake. They must perceive their value no longer as inherent, but as strictly utilitarian. They must be converted from human beings to workers. They must be made to perceive relationships as strictly hierarchical, where those closer to the outside of the Panopticon serve those closer to the inside, where rewards run from outside to inside, and only if there are any rewards left do some trickle back out. Everything must be perceived in terms of its short-term utility. Nothing must be given back. Why would nanotech plants outcompete and overwhelm real live plants? Why would nanotech bacteria outcompete and overwhelm real live bacteria? Why does our machine culture outcompete and overwhelm real live cultures? Because machines are more efficient than living beings. And why are machines more efficient than living beings? Because machines do not give back. All living beings understand that they must give back to their surroundings as much as they take. If they do not, they will destroy their surroundings. By definition, machines and people and cultures that have turned themselves into machines do not give back. They use, and they use up. This gives them short-term advantages and power over the ability to determine outcomes. They outcompete. They overwhelm. They destroy. Once people have been converted into cogs in their machine culture, The division of labor is increased. The skills of those in the outermost rings of the panopticon are diminished. All heads are separated from hands and hearts. Those in the innermost rings refuse to pay attention to anything that cannot be measured, and they convince everyone else to do so as well, if necessary, at the point of a gun. They produce and convince everyone else to do so as well, once again at the point of a gun, if those to be yoked to the machine have not yet been inculcated sufficiently to smile as they draw on their traces. Productivity is strictly defined in action, though it's best to not speak of this directly except when necessary, as the conversion of the living to the dead, living forests to 2x4s, living rivers to hydroelectricity, and from there to smelted aluminum, and from there to beer cans, living human beings into human resources. This conversion first takes place perceptually. Subject must stop perceiving others as subjects themselves instead as objects, and then in the physical world. Efficiency is simply the rate and completeness with which the conversion takes place. If people, or cogs that used to be people, are to be integrated into production, they must be recruited to be efficient. In practice, this means that nothing must stand in the way of production. Not leisure, not love, not a living land base, not life on earth. That nothing human or animal is allowed to stand in the way of production can be surprising until we remember that production is, once again, the conversion of the living to the dead. That people are efficient simply means that life is not allowed to get in the way of its own killing. Central to all of this is it's more difficult by far to control diverse beings than it is to control objects that are all alike. Diversity must be destroyed. All cultures serving gods other than production, death, must be destroyed. All languages that do not serve this end must be forgotten. All creatures we can't use must be eliminated. All people must be standardized well. What do you think schooling's for? One religion, one way of knowing the world, one economic system, one way of living on the land. If this language seems too strong to you, look around and ask what is happening to cultural diversity, to diversity of languages, to biodiversity, to all forms of diversity. They're disappearing. If you cannot perceive that, there is no hope for you. You will, however, always be welcome in the panopticon. I may as well be living in prison. For all practical purposes, I already am. I spend most of my waking hours staring at a computer, moving in perhaps a 5x5 foot space. Sometimes I walk to my mom's and there I watch a baseball game. While there, I generally confine myself to a similarly small space. Other times I get in a car and I sit in a confined space while I drive to other buildings. I walk inside these buildings, I buy things, I come home, I sit in front of the computer. Later, I go to bed. Sure, I walk outside in the forest or I sit by the pond or I watch the moon, but that's not where I live. I live inside this box. I live inside the world of the computer. This morning, as I sat outside for just a few moments before heading back inside to work at the computer, I heard a sound in the forest. A single branch cracked under heavy weight, then silence. Then one squirrel began to speak. It was neither scolding nor yelling in fright. It was clearly gossiping. Another squirrel responded. I don't know what creature walked through the forest and broke that single branch. The squirrels do, however. They know far more about this place I call home than I do. Naturally, they do. They live here. I came back inside to work on the computer, to live inside my box. I am alone in my cell. That would still be true if I were married. It would be true if I had a family. It would be true if I lived in a commune. This is because I would still be cut off from the world. I am not alone in my predicament. Most of us in the industrialized parts of the world already spend more of our meager lives surrounded by machines, interacting with machines, supported by machines, dependent on machines, serving machines, than we do in meaningful communication relationship with wild creatures. How many machines are within 10 feet of you? How many wild plants or animals are within 100 yards of you? Do you make yourself available to them? Do you know who they are individually? Do you have a feel for how well they may know you? Step outside. Listen. How many machines do you hear? How many wild plants or animals? Because our existential stance is so completely solipsistic, remember the guard at the center of the panopticon must always hold himself separate from those in the outer ring. It should come as no surprise that corporations are considered persons worthy of consideration, while flesh and blood non-humans and many humans are not. Nor should it surprise us that the system better serves corporations, these legal machines for making money, amassing power, than it does mere biological humans. We are each and every one of us committed to wedded to, enmeshed in the machine. The machine is grinding us up, each and every one of us, and will not stop until there is nothing left to grind.